What Witch, This, That, or the Other? From Bonnaroo to Coachella, traversing the music festival landscape can be tricky. That's where we come in with high fives for everyone. The What Podcast with Brad Barry, Lord Taco, dedicated to exploring the entire festival scene.
Brad has worked in the radio industry for more than 20 years and currently lives in Brooklyn, where he is program director for three stations, including one in New York, one in Detroit, and one in Miami.
Barry's been a reporter for the Chattanooga Times Free Press, covering all aspects of the entertainment industry since 1987. That's before you were born.
Lord Taco, the smart guy who makes these podcasts on our website at thewhatpodcast.com work, also really good at identifying babies, loves blue-haired moms, PBR, and his beautiful Volkswagen bus.
We all fell in love with the Bonnaroo Festival years ago, not only because of the amazing bands that play there every year, but also because of the incredible community spirit that has developed around it. Radiate positivity.
And we really like talking about the inside baseball stuff when it comes to putting on a huge music festival. So join us.
You can hear the What Podcast on the Consequence Podcast Network or anywhere you find your favorite podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network. Writing a hit song is a miraculous and mysterious thing. Sometimes it comes totally naturally, and a classic song is written in like 20 minutes. That's how long it took Stevie Nicks to write Dreams. And yes, that's insanely fast, especially for a song that huge. Then sometimes the process is torturous and takes months to get a song just right. It allegedly took Freddie Mercury 6 years to write Bohemian Rhapsody, which is a really, really long time. But no matter how long it takes or how hard it is to produce a masterpiece, chart-topping records are like gold dust. Artists are lucky to write even one song that breaks through and becomes a gigantic hit. The thing that's odd and fantastic about The Stranger is that it doesn't have one or two big songs. It's an album full of them.
That's the crazy thing about it, is like, it's a greatest hits record.
This is Bayside frontman Anthony Ranieri.
It's hard to believe that all these songs were on one record, that he wrote this all consecutively. He wrote all these songs, like all in a short span of time in his life. It's like something clicked.
Anthony's right. The Stranger is packed full of songs that are so well known, it seems absurd that they were all created at the same time. But the truth is, most of them are put together in the studio in a span of just 3 weeks.
Brenda Renetti were the popular steadies and the king and the queen of the funk. Riding around with the car top down and the radio on.
In this episode, we're taking a closer look at six of The Stranger's biggest songs. 4 top 40 hits and 2 fan favorites. We'll find out how Billy's storytelling prowess, the insights of his band and producer, some celebrity studio visitors, and even an unlikely assist from the Catholic Church all helped to create an album full of classic songs that have been thrilling fans since 1977. For the Consequence Podcast Network and Sony Legacy, I'm Adam Unz, and this is The Opus.
Everyone said they were crazy. Brenda, you know that you're much too lazy, and Eddie could never afford to live that kind of life. Oh, but there we were waving Brenda and Eddie goodbye.
Oh. The songs on The Stranger are varied from a melodic and rhythmic standpoint. There are sharp pop hooks and soaring, heartfelt ballads. They're all totally unique, which is a part of The Stranger's lasting appeal. But the common thread running through all of them is incredible storytelling, super catchy melodies, and innovative studio techniques. That's clear straight away from the album's opening track, Movin' Out, one of the two upbeat top 40 hits on the album, and a song that bowls over other musicians like Ben Folds.
Movin' Out it's just such clever, distinct songwriting, man. I mean, that shit's to die for. That pops into my head, I'd shit myself. Like, that's crazy. It's time to retire. Like, that's just so fucking good.
Anthony works in the grocery store, saving his pennies for someday. Mama Leone left a note on the door. She said, Sonny, move out to the country. I've been working too hard to give you a heart attack.
out in Hackensack. Is that all you get for your money? And it seems such a waste of time. If that's what it's all about, Mama, if that's moving up, then I'm moving out.
Moving Out is so vibrant and joyous. It's an amazing way to launch you into The Stranger. And it also includes one of the most iconic elements Billy ever recorded, something that's made the song really stand out for many fans, including a young Anthony Carone from the Arkells.
As a kid, I always thought the line in Moving Out when he's like, Cadillac, cack, 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 and he does that natural delay thing. Well, I always thought it was hilarious. Like, I would end up on the floor in hysterics whenever my dad had that on.
That natural delay effect is so recognizable that it's the easiest way to remind people of the song if they don't know it from the title. So you'd think that there was a lot of production expertise used to make that happen, right? Well, Billy wanted to produce the effect with studio wizardry, but Phil Ramone had other ideas.
I actually wanted an echo machine to do that instead of me doing it. And I just saying to Phil, and it should go, ack, 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 ack. And he goes, why don't you just do it? It's going to take 4 hours for us to get the exact sequencing on it. So I did. Things like this happen, like trying to explain what I was looking for, and Phil said, you just did it.
It was that easy. Crazy, right? That simple little sonic innovation helped to make Moving Out really pop. But the real star of the show is its storytelling. It paints a vibrant picture of late 70s New York that really struck a chord with native New Yorkers like Bayside's Anthony Ranieri.
I grew up there. I lived in those places. I remember it, the music and the record itself, like going back to my earliest memories of music. But part of the lasting power for me now is that it brings me back to being a kid and going into all these smoke-filled, you know, restaurants on Mulberry Street. Listening to this record like takes me back to that. We knew people that moved out to Hackensack. We knew people who moved up and out. And, you know, and you go to Long Island or you go to New Jersey because you made it, you know, so you go leave the city into like your suburban life in New Jersey. You know, I lived everything that he's talking about. It's pretty crazy.
Billy pairs incredible narrative structures with bouncy melodies in a way that no other artist can. Sometimes people don't even notice the meaning of his lyrics because the songs are so frickin' catchy. On Only the Good Die Young, that lighter sound contrasted with some pretty controversial subject matter. Let's face it, a song about budding sexuality and Catholic schoolgirls was always gonna ruffle some feathers, and the original, slower version of the song didn't do much to pull focus from the heaviness of the lyrics.
Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. Catholic girls start much too late. Sooner or later it comes down to fate, and I might as well be the one.
But then, an unexpected superstar studio visitor encouraged a lighter, brighter sound stemming from Liberty DeVito's drumming.
One day, Paul Simon came in.
No, really. This actually happened.
And we're doing Only the Good Die Young. And, you know, originally Billy wrote this song as a reggae tune. And I tell him it sucks. You know, the closest that he's ever been to Jamaica was the Long Island Railroad stops at Jamaica and Queens. So we're trying to figure out what to do. And Paul Simon comes in and he's listening. And his idea was the lyric is so heavy because it actually kind of pushes down the Catholic Church and the way they think and stuff like that. Paul Simon said, because the lyric is so heavy, you should do something very lighthearted and the lyric will just go over people's heads. So that's when I came up with the fast shuffle.
Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girls start much too late. All the sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one.
And so I started that, and Billy was like, okay, this feels good. It feels good. And that's how it turned out on the record.
Told you the price that you pay, the things that you might have done. Only the good die young.
With that clever camouflage, when the Catholic Church caught wind of it, they were not happy. Quite a few radio stations banned the song because of it. But, as Phil Ramone remembers, their disapproval actually gave the song a giant boost.
And he went on Saturday Night Live and did Only the Good Die Young. As I told him, I got letters from the Archdiocese. I knew that something was good. It wasn't what I wanted to read, but it obviously caused some kind of stirring.
You know what happens when an authority figure tells kids they can't have something, right? They want it more! Only the Good Die Young nearly cracked the top 20, at least partially because of the Catholic Church's disapproval. And that wasn't the only song on The Stranger to hit a nerve with the listening public. The album's two hit ballads faced their own controversies, especially She's Always a Woman.
She can kill with a smile, she can wound with her eyes, and she can ruin your faith with her casual lies. And she only reveals what she wants you to see. She hides like a child, but she's always a woman to me.
The lyric is somewhat troubling. You know, some people said, oh, he's a misogynist. You know, look what he says about this woman. And he wrote this song called She's Only a Woman, which always cracks me up every time I read it. I said, well, that's what you call it. That's not what I call it. To me, it's a very simple, understandable lyric. She may be that to you, but she's this to me. You know, so what's your problem?
She's a woman to me.
Whatever backlash those lyrics faced didn't stop She's Always a Woman's success. It hit number 17 in the Billboard Hot 100 charts, once again proving that controversy and success are not mutually exclusive. The album's other big ballad faced similar, albeit more muted, backlash too. And in a way, it kind of makes sense. She's Always a Woman and Just the Way You Are, both written about Billy's then-wife Elizabeth, are often seen as two sides of the same coin. An idea that Ben Folds subscribes to.
She's Always a Woman is written for a man. The sentimentality is very male. Just the Way You Are is something that a woman would like to hear a man say. Even though I would say he's more of a masculine writer, he rides the gender line nicely. If there's too much bro in a songwriter, I've never been into it. When I see those two songs, is they're balanced over the intuition that he's written one ballad that is for a man to sort of sing to himself while he's driving and crying. She's always a woman to me. And then Just the Way You Are is like, you know, I guess I better send her a note.
Whether that theory holds water or not is up for debate, but both of those songs clearly touched a lot of people. Just the Way You Are was the breakout song from The Stranger. It's the song that really put the album on the map and eventually shot up to number 3 in the charts. Quite an impressive feat for a song that Billy literally dreamt up.
I had a dream, and then I remember waking up in the middle of the night going, this is a great idea for a song, and going back to sleep, and waking up and not remembering what I dreamt, and knowing, what was that? I had a really good idea, and then I forgot. And a couple of weeks later, I'm in a business meeting, it's talking to accountants or lawyers, it's some kind of boring stuff, and the dream reoccurs to me right at that moment, because my mind drifted off from hearing numbers and legal jargon, and boom, it came right back into my head, and I said, I have to go. Right now, I think I have an idea for a song. So the accountants and lawyers went, well, go. Yeah, go. I ran home and I started playing the theme that had reoccurred. And on my way home, I was thinking, okay, how am I going to remember this? Da, 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 da. Don't be crazy. Don't be stupid. And they're called bailout lyrics. But you have to use them to remember the notes, to remember the theme you sang. So I got home and I ended up writing it all in one sitting, pretty much. It took me maybe about, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours. But yeah, I remember writing that very well.
That's the mark of an artist who understands his own process. When inspiration strikes, you just have to drop everything and create. However, the finished song took quite a while to come together, and the tempo and feel of it changed dramatically, even after the band started playing it live.
We had some difficulty finding what the drum pattern should be. I remember Liberty started playing it as a cha-cha, and we hated that. Don't you want me to cha-cha-cha? The drive, they want to cha-cha-cha. We just, we hate that. I remember Liberty throwing his sticks. I don't want to be a cocktail lounge drummer. We said, we don't want you to either.
You always have my unspoken passion. Although I might not seem to care.
And Phil came up with that pattern that goes boom, that, boom, that, boom, sort of a backwards Latin samba thing, which we wouldn't even have considered playing unless Phil came up with it.
I just want someone that I can talk to. I want you just the way you are.
Even after Just the Way You Are took its final shape, Billy and the band almost didn't put it on the album. The Stranger's biggest hit, the song that made Billy a superstar. The whole band thought it was a syrupy sweet, over-the-top love song, which is fair. And to be honest, Billy still believes that to this day. So it was very, very lucky that a couple of forward-thinking superstars happened to pop into the studio when the song's fate was being decided.
We were sitting around, you know, we had a bunch of guys here. There was no girl in the band. It was just all guys. And we're listening back going, well, do you like it? I don't know. It's a chick song. You know, none of us were all that hot to put it on the album. And then we were listening back again, and Phoebe Snow came by with Linda Ronstadt, and they heard the song. And we loved that song. We said, man, we don't like it. We're not sure we're going to put it on the album. And they said, you're crazy. You've got to put that song on the album. We said, yeah, these girls like the song. I guess we should put it on the album. So we kept it on, thanks to them.
Lucky save, right? Billy's songwriting skills are so innate that there were times when he couldn't identify their brilliance. He had this uncanny ability to dream up songs that spoke to people and pulled on their heartstrings. Vienna, a fan favorite and one of his most played songs, came to him almost as easily as Just the Way You Are had.
Vienna is just kind of this bastard child that appeared out of nowhere, popped out, and I just wrote it, and I said, this fits the mood of this album. Didn't even really know at the time why I wrote it. It just, boop, popped out.
Slow down, you crazy child. You're so ambitious for a juvenile. But then if you're so smart, tell me why are you still so afraid? Where's the fire? What's the hurry about? You better cool it off before you burn it out. You got so much to do and only so many hours in a day. Hey, but you know that when the truth is told, that you can get what you want or you can just get old. You're gonna kick off before you even get halfway through. Ooh. When will you realize Vienna waits for you?
It was never a single, but it's become one of his most popular songs. When he offers a choice of Vienna or Just the Way You Are to his fans at his concerts, they always choose Vienna. Even Phil Ramone said there was something special about that song.
Vienna is an incredible song. This generation now, the up-and-coming artists ask me about that song more than anything. What does it mean? That's up to you, but it's like most great songs, they're not always narratives of personal. Vienna is a state of mind, it's place, or it's not. Those are the three choices you have. It's fictional, or is it Vienna?
That lyrical ambiguity is a big part of Vienna's appeal. Gen Z caught onto it, and it became hugely popular on TikTok as a mental health anthem. It's a pretty remarkable trajectory for an album track from the late 70s, and the song that served as the Stranger's centerpiece followed a similar path.
A bottle of white, a bottle of red, perhaps a bottle of rosé instead. Get a table near the street in our old familiar place. You and I, face to face.
Scenes from an Italian Restaurant is an epic song. Even though it was never a single, it's been a staple of Billy's live shows since he first started playing it. It takes you on this incredible, sweeping, almost musical theatery journey that's both exciting and moving. Singer-songwriter and musician Andrew McMahon has always been blown away by the size and scope of its songcraft.
There was something about Scenes from an Italian Restaurant. For me as a kid and as a piano player, just the adventurous nature of that track. It sort of speaks to why I love Billy Joel in general, which is just his willingness to tell a story and not be held back by sort of conventional wisdom about how long should a song be and can it have movements to be so unafraid to just dig into making a movie out of a piece of pop music, you know? And so for me, that was really the early favorite.
Scenes from an Italian Restaurant didn't just accidentally end up with an epic structure and runtime. It was completely by design.
I had always admired the B-side of the album Abbey Road, which was essentially a bunch of individual songs that were strung together by George Martin. And that's pretty much what I did with Scenes from an Italian Restaurant. I had this initial ballad of Brenda and Eddie. So this was about the high school prom, king and queen, you know, sweethearts who break up and they go on with their lives. And I said, okay, well, that's not the whole story. So I started with the premise of a bottle of red, a bottle of white, set up a scene where there's people sitting in an Italian restaurant starting to talk about the old days. And then the second section of that is when the sax comes in, which is supposed to represent a time change. And then it goes into the ballad of Brenda and Eddie for it. So we realized this is kind of like trying to recreate side B of Abbey Road, except not as long, just in a shorter version.
Ben Folds adores Scenes from an Italian Restaurant and sees it as Billy's version of the American experience.
Scenes from an Italian Restaurant is another real Billy Joel move in its epicness. It's kind of musical theater-ish in a way, you know? They're scenes probably more than stories. They imply stories. They're almost like Long Island's version of Norman Rockwell. You see pictures.
Billy's fans form a unique bond with his songs. Whether he's telling sharp, highly detailed stories about his cast of New York characters, or whether he's painting with an impressionistic brush and leaving room for everyone to draw their own conclusions, fans and fellow musicians like Regina Spektor have drawn so much inspiration from the broad emotional life packed into The Stranger's 9 songs.
He kind of has, in this record, either these like super deep emotional love things or like the sort of everyday life, fuck you songs, you know? And I really love those two modes. Like, they really speak to me personally. But when I listen to a lot of those melodies, it's like you go on this ride and you really enjoy, let's say, the fuck you and fuck off and I'm gonna do things how I wanna do and like money's not where it's at and stupid stuff, like don't get stuck in the stupid stuff and the material stuff of life that sort of really runs through all of his music. Then like a note will go somewhere and you'll get this like, like it'll like hurt in this way where you're just like, oh, it's so beautiful and it's got this real bittersweetness. But I think that bittersweetness that you can't put your finger on, that sometimes it comes in a lyric and sometimes it's where it, like the melody goes to a certain note and it just kind of hurts and you get kind of teary. And that's him being a soulful person who's absorbed all of these complexities and all of these things and is really processing life through music.
Billy's music is both so specific and so universal at the same time. The songs on The Stranger made him a superstar because everyone can understand and relate to the stories he tells, whether they share those exact experiences or not. As Ben Folds tells it, Billy's appeal boils down to this.
I began to realize humbly that most of us have to admit we won't achieve over and over again the level of greatness in songwriting. Forget the awards and the charts and the sales. Just his craft. He's a genius.
And who would disagree with that?
Under an idiot had it already by the summer of 75. From the height of the low to the end of the show for the rest of their lives.
On the next episode of The Opus, we're finishing out the season by taking a look at Billy Joel's career after The Stranger, the legacy of that incredible album, and of course, those legendary and ongoing concerts at Madison Square Garden. For the Consequence Podcast Network and Sony Legacy, I'm Adam Unz, and this has been The Opus.
Or hey, ARMY and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.